It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Youssef Munayyer is Palestinian-American based in Washington, D.C. He has family and friends that he's been trying to keep in touch with in Gaza, but that's been an almost impossible task.
It's extremely terrifying, especially because by this point you've probably lost contact with your loved ones because communications have been effectively cut off, electricity has been cut off, fuel for backup generators to provide electricity has been cut off. So, you know, people are glued to their television screens now, watching what is taking place in the Gaza Strip, perhaps even watching the airstrikes that are killing their families. And they may not know for days or weeks about what has happened to them.
Youssef leads the Palestine-Israel program at Arab Center Washington, D.C., where he focuses on U.S. policy towards the region. He's very clear that for Palestinians in Gaza, this is not their first war or second war. He says people living there have become accustomed to Israeli airstrikes.
So much so that oftentimes they can identify from the sound that they hear in the sky whether the Israeli jet that's dropping ordnance is an F-14 or an F-16 or something else. It's an existence that is so foreign to us who do not live in a war zone. And given all of that, what I'm hearing from people on the ground is that this is more horrific than anything that they've ever experienced before.
Since Hamas attacked Israeli citizens on October 7th and took almost 200 hostages, including children, Israel unleashed an assault on the Gaza Strip. You can hear the desperation of this young woman, Tala. She's 21.
I have only one question. We as civilians, where are we supposed to go?
She sent this dispatch from Gaza to Slate reporter Ayman Ismail.
We went to schools, they bombed schools. We went to the south, they bombed the south. We went to hospitals, they bombed the hospitals. It's a massacre.
Palestinians in Gaza were told to move south, but there have still been airstrikes on southern cities. People lack access to food, water, and medicine, and like Youssef said, to electricity. The suffering in Gaza was made worse this week when a blast struck a hospital, killing hundreds. Hamas blamed Israel for the hospital attack, but Israeli and American intelligence said it appeared to come from another Palestinian militant group. And as the agony in Gaza reached a new pitch, President Biden landed in Tel Aviv.
I come to Israel with a single message. You're not alone. You are not alone.
The president offered unwavering support to the country in its fight against Hamas in the form of military assets and a promise to keep the Iron Dome supplied. And he pledged aid to Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank.
Palestinian people are suffering greatly as well. We mourn the loss of innocent Palestinian lives like the entire world.
But there's been no deviation from the idea that war must go on. And Youssef Munayyer has been watching things unfold with horror.
The pace of killing that we are seeing on the ground is unprecedented in the history of Israel's bombardments in Gaza. There's no justification in a war like this because the people who are going to suffer the most are always going to be the people who have the least to do with anything.
Today on the show, the situation in Gaza and the region, It's getting worse, and the U.S. is becoming further entangled in it. I'm Yasmin Khan, in for Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Can you share any details of what you're hearing from friends and family there? I don't know if you're getting texts or if you're speaking to anyone by phone.
You know, information is difficult to get. People are trying to conserve whatever battery they may have.
Right.
Connection to, cellular networks is very limited. Sometimes you may get a text message from people on the ground saying alive. And that message may have been sent 2 days ago. People are trying to charge their phones off of car batteries. And then in the hours that go by where you don't get that message, you wonder why. What does that mean? Are they still there? It's impossible. It's impossible. No people should have to be subjected to this. And the people of Gaza have been subjected to this over and over again. And the only thing the world has told them is that there is no other option but this.
Do Gazans have any options for safety anywhere at the moment?
No, they don't. There are Palestinians in Gaza who have been killed. And then there are Palestinians in Gaza who feel that they are going to be imminently killed. That's it. And again, this is not new in terms of what we've seen when there is bombardment of the space on a repeated basis. Every time there is a war like this on Gaza, the Israeli military tells people, hey, you can go here. Hey, you can go there. And people who followed those orders have been killed in airstrikes on those places. And everybody in Gaza who has lived through this, of course, remembers those things. They clearly cannot trust anything the Israeli military is saying. Usually Israeli officials seek to maintain a pretense of concern for civilian life. But they feel that in this moment, they have the international support to carry out whatever it is that they want to do in the Gaza Strip, which, by the way, are different than what we've seen in the past.
So you've seen a shift in their actual language.
I've watched this time and time again. I've seen the statements of Israeli officials around their military operations in 2008, in 2012, in 2014, in 2018, in 2021. There is a clear shift in the way that they are speaking about this. When reporters have asked them about civilian casualties this time around,
and what about those Palestinians in hospital who are on life support and babies and incubators whose life support and incubator will have to be turned off because the Israelis have cut the power to Gaza?
Are you seriously keep on asking me about Palestinian civilians? What's wrong with you? Have you not seen what happened? We're fighting Nazis.
That's not the normal line from Israeli officials. And when you pair that with the language from the defense minister about Palestinians being human beasts, the language from the Israeli prime minister about Palestinians being the children of darkness. And then you pair that with the actual policies of cutting off the basic needs for sustaining human life, like water and electricity and fuel, in a place like Gaza, in an indiscriminate way, targeting everybody there. You know, this is the kind of language that precedes mass atrocities, and mass atrocities are taking place in Gaza.
How would you describe Israel's military strategy right now, if there is one?
Gaza is a problem that nobody has wanted to deal with, and they'd rather it just disappear. The Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin in 1992, long before the current realities in Gaza, said that, you know, I wish I could wake up one day and just see Gaza disappear into the sea. You can take at face value some of the statements from Israeli officials about what their strategy has been. Historically, they have dealt with Gaza in the last decade and a half or so with this approach that they call mowing the lawn, which means that effectively they see periodic bombardment as a form of maintenance that they must apply to Gaza to maintain some kind of deterrence. And so there is a assumed inevitability to having to bomb again and again and again. And each time, of course, they do this, it clearly does not solve the problem. So I think there is a recognition now that approach has clearly failed, and failed in a massive way. And so what we are seeing now is either a new Israeli strategy that has not yet been made clear to the public, or perhaps even scarier, the complete absence of strategy altogether, which I think is far more likely, and nothing but unmitigated vengeance against a civilian population from a state that is enraged and at the same time dysfunctional. And the scariest thing about this is that, of course, as it continues, and we are starting to see this now, we should expect the significant possibility of it becoming a much broader regional war.
Mowing the lawn is a chilling term.
It is. It is. And it's, it's used repeatedly to describe this as if it's some sort of, normal thing to refer to a space where there's 2 million people, half of them children. And I would say, too, what morality is there in military operations that will inevitably kill civilians and usually kill more civilians than anything else, whose repetition is pre-planned? This is a failure of policy and vision and strategy, but it's one that has been accepted and tolerated not just by Israel, but by Israel's strongest supporters, including here in the United States.
After the break, Biden visits Israel in a show of support, but leaders from Jordan, Egypt, and Palestine cancel meetings with him. So, what should the president do to help stabilize the region?
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen. And her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
President Biden was in Tel Aviv just yesterday, pledging that Israel would have what it needed to protect itself.
For decades, we've ensured Israel's qualitative military edge. And later this week, I'm going to ask the United States Congress for an unprecedented support package for Israel's defense. We're going to keep Iron Dome fully supplied so it can continue standing sentinel over Israeli skies, saving Israeli lives.
What message does this visit send in your mind?
Well, it depends to what audience. To the Israelis, it's clearly a message that says, I'm here to back you and do whatever it is you want to do. And that's a message, of course, that was sent not just with the presidential visit, but with arms that were supplied to Israel and with aircraft carriers that have been sent to the region as well.
The world will know that Israel is stronger than ever. And my message to any state or any other hostile actor thinking about attacking Israel remains the same as it was a week ago. Don't. Don't. Don't.
To Palestinians and to the rest of the Arab and Muslim world, which is enraged right now over what Israel is doing to Gaza, it sends the message that Biden simply doesn't care about them. He doesn't care about their perspectives. He doesn't care about how the United States is seen in the region. He doesn't care about what American allies in the region have been telling him, including the allies who were supposed to meet with him and then canceled their meetings that were scheduled with him to take place. And that, I think, is devastating, not just for the region, not just for the people in Gaza, but also for American credibility. That is going to have reverberations outside of the region as well. including in places like Ukraine, where, you know, the United States has been trying to rally more support from the global South. That's always looked at the American position with a degree of skepticism. And it's just, it's dangerous, it's irresponsible, and it's horrifying.
Yeah. How do you think this visit is changed by the fact that Biden will only be meeting with Netanyahu now?
Well, look, it's a tremendous embarrassment for the United States. You know, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, Mahmoud Abbas or the Palestinian Authority, you have to remember, these are all American allies. Mm-hmm. These are governments that are supported by the United States. Their militaries are financed by the United States. And the American president is getting on a plane and coming to the region to meet with you, and you cancel your meeting with him. You know, this is a massive embarrassment for Biden, who was taking a tremendous political risk by attempting this to begin with. I think he's been significantly misadvised on this issue.
Yeah, you tweeted that you've come to the conclusion that Biden was totally unprepared for and not capable of dealing with this crisis.
Absolutely. I mean, when his national security advisor, 10 days before this started, is talking about the Middle East.
The Middle East region is quieter today than it has been in two decades. Now, challenges remain. Iran's nuclear weapons program, the tensions between Israelis and Palestinians. But the amount of time that I have to spend on crisis and conflict in the Middle East today compared to any of my predecessors going back to 9/11 is significantly reduced.
You have to wonder what sort of advice the president is getting, who he's listening to and who he trusts in this moment. And, America's entire approach to the region, by the way, this is not just about this moment. This is about the approach that they have taken over months and since the beginning of this administration, has been to effectively follow the Jared Kushner school of foreign policy and attempt to continue this process of normalizing relations between Israel and Arab countries. We heard a lot of reporting around the amount of time the United States has invested in this process with Saudi Arabia just in the days and weeks before all of this started. And, you know, so many people who know the region have been explaining to American policymakers that you cannot ignore the centrality of Palestine in this region. If you do, the region is going to explode. The results are on full display now.
Biden's speech from Tel Aviv was simultaneously steadfast in its support for Israel, while also mentioning the need for its ally to protect civilians and ensure access to humanitarian aid.
The people of Gaza need food, water, medicine, shelter. Today, I asked the Israeli cabinet, who I met with for some time this morning, to agree to the delivery of life-saving humanitarian assistance to civilians in Gaza, based on the understanding that there will be inspections and that the aid should go to civilians, not to Hamas.
When I asked Youssef if he thought Biden's visit might help advance those objectives, he took a step back.
I think we are making a mistake by thinking about the stakes of this visit as being narrowly focused on what is happening in Gaza. The regional implications of what is taking place can very quickly bring the entire region into war and can draw the United States into war as well. A lot of that depends on what is happening on the Gaza Strip, in the Gaza Strip. And one would hope that an American president who has his finger on the trigger and is bringing aircraft carriers into the region, understands the stakes of what allowing an Israeli military operation in Gaza actually amount to. And so, you know, I would hope that the president is delivering messages to the Israelis that this has to stop, that the stakes here are much bigger than anything between Israel and Hamas, and that every moment that goes by with this going forward is a moment where both Israel and the United States will have less leverage, less credibility, and less control over where things go from there. That's the only responsible message that I think could be sent by Biden right now. The public messaging suggests that it's not that at all.
I do wonder what you are hoping to see in terms of stemming the crisis there right now in the immediate. What can be done?
We need an immediate ceasefire. That's the most important thing. It's not enough to say we want to send humanitarian aid to people because we care about them while we're dropping bombs on them. It doesn't work like that. We need an immediate ceasefire. This is the most important and most direct way to save human life now. And frankly, it will probably allow for time and cooler heads to prevail to try to prevent a much bigger conflagration in the region that will make what's taking place in Gaza right now seem peaceful in comparison. So I think this is the most urgent concern and need right now to get an immediate ceasefire. The United Nations is calling for it. Mm-hmm. Others have called for it as well. But it's I think, the most prudent course of action right now.
Thank you very much for your time and all of your patient explanations. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Youssef Munayer is the head of the Palestine-Israel program at Arab Center, Washington, D.C. That's the show. If you're a fan of What Next, the best way to support our work is to join Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. What Next is produced by Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Anna Phillips, Paige Osborne, and Madeline Ducharme. We also had help from Slate's Ayman Ismail. We're led by Alicia Montgomery with a little help from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Yasmin Khan, in for Mary Harris. Find me on Twitter. I'm at Yasmin Khan. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.